in a legislative environment which we feel at this stage is inadequate to combat such trade. Especially the illicit market for aluminium and copper stimulates the theft of millions of rands worth of electric cabling, and we all know what are the results thereof, especially the crippling of telecommunications and electrical systems and even railways at huge costs. Madam Chair, it can be used to limit trading in certain second-hand goods and, for instance, second-hand vehicles may not be imported into the country. Other role players which were very important is Spoornet, Transnet, Eskom, Telkom and some local governments regarding the theft of non-ferrous metals. And just before the meeting, the Secretary has informed me that they have contacted Eskom and asked whether they want to make submissions on the bill, and they've already indicated to the committee that their inputs were accommodated in the bill and that they are satisfied with the bill as it is. Madam Chair, the draft bill was also tabled in the Trading Industry Chamber of NATLAC during 2006, and that process was one of the processes that stalled our drafting to some extent, but it was very useful, the inputs that we got from that. Government, Business and Labour discussed the draft. No disagreements were noted, and the principles in the draft bill were supported by the stakeholders. Furthermore, we followed the cluster process of taking the bill to Parliament. Madam Chair, then there's a list of the second consultation process. I'm not going to go through the names once again. They are on record there, and it is from these lists that we have provided to the Secretary of the committee with the email addresses and which were contacted in order to make submissions if they want to do that to the committee. And actually, in respect of requirements from the industry, we were made well aware of the fact that each industry segment have a unique challenges and unique requirements, and that regulations should be created to separate and tailor a framework for each of the different industry segments. The ideal is to harmonize the needs of the government and the police service, in particular in preventing crime, with those of the second-hand dealers, not to stifle their free economic trade. Madam Chair, there are certain exemptions if we can go to the contents of the bill itself. It does not apply to second-hand goods sold by way of public auction, that is clause 2, authorized by warrant of execution or order of court of law, and it would not apply to a dealer who is a member of an accredited association to the extent that the members of that accredited association are exempted by the minister. And only members of associations accredited by the National Commissioner may be exempted. Madam Chair, that is another form of self-regulation. And if I could say right from the start, the idea is not to have a self-regulation of the industry right from scratch. It is something that we see the application and the enforcement of the Act may lead to eventually. And Madam Chair, I think we would all realize that the police alone cannot police an industry from day to day, and if we can reach the situation in future where there are accredited associations which actually look after their members and which see to it that their members actually remain within a regulatory framework, we can achieve much more than by mere policing and looking at registers every day. And those exemptions might be lost. If they don't play the game, they might lose it. But once again, we will accredit associations as we go along, and a segment of the industry will need to prove itself before any exemptions will be made. Madam Chair, clause 3 of the bill provides that all persons who carry on business as a dealer must be registered. The applications must be made to the National Commissioner, and an application must be made for each and every premises on which business will be done. Dealer includes the person who carries on the business of second-hand goods, scrap metal dealer, as well as a pawnbroker. The bill is supported by definitions of scrap metal, second-hand goods, precious metals, and pawnbrokers, and all these are relevant to the obligation to register. A certificate of registration will be issued if it's successful by the National Commissioner, and it will be valid for 5 years. Provision will be made for the amendment conditions or variation of conditions. Registration may be terminated or cancelled, and the renewal of registration must be applied for at least 90 days before the registration lapses. In respect of disqualification, Madam Chair, previous conviction, if a person was sentenced to imprisonment without an option of a fine, if in the preceding 10 years a person was convicted for an offence in terms of the present act or this bill, if the person is in unrehabilitated insolvent, the person is under 18 years, does not permanently reside in South Africa, or other law any other law disqualifies the person from carrying on a business, or if it's a business of which the person with an interest, a partner or a beneficiary of a trust, is disqualified. Madam Chair, if I can come back to the functions of the dealer associations. There can be established categories of dealers according to the goods that they're dealing. They will establish and maintain minimum legal and ethical standards for that market segment. They will inspect business premises of members, make recommendations to the National Commissioner in respect of registration. They will assist members with research and development. They will advise the National Commissioner in respect of the industry standards and technological development in the industry, and they must keep members registered. Madam Chair, in respect of records that must be kept by dealers, the identity and particulars of all acquisitions or disposal of goods, a full description of the goods, the signature name and identity number of the client, copies of the identity document or passport of the client, and these documents must be retained for 5 years. Madam Chair, a new feature which is not at all addressed in the present act is the one about false information and suspicious transactions, very much along the line of reporting of suspicious transactions in the Prevention of Organized Crime Act and the Corruption Act. If there's a suspicion of information provided to the dealer, there's a suspicion that goods are stolen, it must be reported to a police station. Reports must be noted in the occurrence book and a serial number provided. It's a criminal offence if such a suspicion is not reported. Then another new feature is that goods may not be changed or altered within a period of 7 days. You find that whether it's a bicycle or some object which ends up in the at the dealer, there's suspicion it might be stolen, they spray it over or change the features of the item. That may not be done. And we can go to the register if the article is in the register and within 7 days it has been changed, that in itself could be an offence. Madam Chair, on the restriction from dealers and pawnbrokers, no dealer may acquire or accept informed goods from any person under the age of 18 years. I think we have seen in the past that youngsters would go and swap things for to obtain money for illegal purposes or drugs or whatever. Take into his possession goods of which he is not convinced that the person is the owner or title holder and authorized to dispose thereof. Deliver goods within 7 days to be altered or changed, or accept informed firearms or ammunition. In other words, firearms and ammunition may not at all be accepted as a pawn. The records required in respect of motor vehicles is the vehicle identification number, the odometer reading, exterior trim and color, distinguishing marks such as microdot particulars, full particulars of person disposing of the vehicle, including the ID number, full names, address, original ID document, the proof of registration of the vehicle, and a copy of the ID document or passport, and all these documents must also be kept for 5 years. And here also a new feature, the obligation to register as a recycler, and I think this is one of the main reasons why we have the problem with the recycling of especially non-ferrous metals. Because there is at present no such obligation. A dealer must be involved in the recycling of any controlled metal. Such dealer must be registered. No person may be in possession of an apparatus which can be used for recycling of any controlled metal unless the person is registered, or in the case of precious metals, authorized to possess and recycle metals under the Precious Metals Act. On communication equipment, that can be anything from a cell phone to radios, to two-way radios, etc. Full records must be kept. There must be a description of the goods. And Madam Chair, we should recall that in Section 40 of the perception legislation, there's also obligations which relate to the same issue in respect of details that must be kept of cell phones that are being sold or bought. The call is, of course, subject to those provisions of the Interception Act. Madam Chair, if we look at the enforcement, the bill provides for routine inspections during working hours, for warrants for search and seizure, powers in respect of search and seizure and sealing off of premises, and provision to extend the powers in the Act to public entities to assist with enforcement, for example, Spoornet, Telkom and Eskom. We feel that will also assist the police in policing the Act. In respect of an appeal procedure, whenever a decision is taken by the National Commissioner and which affects the rights of a person and the person is not in agreement, the person might appeal to the Minister in respect of such a decision. Madam Chair, the Act also provides for regulations. Clause 42 empowers the Minister to make regulations which would suit the law enforcement needs in respect of respective sectors in the industry or different types of goods. There's a transitional provision in Clause 43 which will regulate the transition from the present Act to the new one. Then, of course, an appeal of the 1955 Act in Clause 44, and the Act will come into operation on a date determined by the President in the Gazette. Madam Chair, I'm just going to refer very briefly to the accreditation process. Such an application must be made to the National Commissioner. A refusal requires the opportunity for the applicant to make written representations before final decision. The applicant will have 30 days to make such a representation. The Dealers Association must be notified of decisions in respect of the application and can be cancelled if there's non-compliance. Opportunity for representations where cancellation is considered, also a 30-day period provided for. And Chair, in respect of the industry, the regulations must provide for general dealers and pawnbrokers, motor vehicle and vehicle parts dealers, scrap metal dealers, recyclers, communication equipment dealers and auctioneers. And of course, this is not a closed list. I think if we think of anything that can be bought, it can be sold second-hand as well. I'm sure the role of the associations, each industry segment may be represented by one or more association, and the regulations will determine the minimum standards for associations to comply with, and regulations will determine minimum standards applicable to the members of that association. Madam Chair, I think I've already mentioned the role of the associations to support the members of the applications to recommend, even if some changes to the law is necessary, they can play a role to advise the Minister to promote ethical trading amongst its own members. As I've said, Madam Chair, this is a degree of self-regulation, but one that will be done on a proven track record and not an automatic general exemption as in the present Act. The bill can operate without any self-regulation. In other words, even if there's no accredited association, the bill can operate until associations have been accredited. The self-regulation will only apply in areas where there's a proven record and there's no risk of abuse. And Chair, if I can summarise, the draft bill provides for a strong regulatory environment impacting on all second-hand goods and dealers. The bill will address each market segment uniquely. Legitimate dealers will benefit, and through the accreditation of associations, some of the bureaucracy can be lessened once they have proven that industry segment can regulate itself. Dealers in recyclers of metals such as copper and aluminium must be registered as such, and no recycling equipment may be kept at their premises
other than that of registered recycler.
Madam Chair, and then I can just mention that as you have noticed that the drafting of this bill started even way before 2003, and one of the reasons was that we've really gone through a very intensive consultation process. When we received the comments back on the first draft, the State Law Advisor said that there were so many amendments to the bill that it would be better to publish it again in the Gazette, and we followed that route. And then when the NetLAC and then all those processes came, we took the extra mile with consultation. And I would be very interested to see, Madam Chair, what the response will be from the industry on the bill itself in view of the consultation process. But hopefully we have covered all the comments that we've received and the very constructive role that the industry itself played in the drafting of this legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you,
Jim.
Thank you very much, Advocate Jacob. Remember, that's the presentation from the department on the second-hand goods bill. I have recognized Honorable Kolabanas, Mr. Jabu, any of you, and I'll take the second special case after that.
Thank you very much, and I was very pleased to hear your explanations at the end there. I mean, this is a spectacular improvement on what was a positively decrepit bill from 1955. But obviously, the length of time from 2003, we really were quite astounded at that. And while I understand you've had quite a lengthy process to go through, years and years and years and years, it's quite extraordinary, but I will accept your explanations and you have consulted very widely, so that is admirable. A couple of questions. You mentioned that in the consultation process you spoke to several members of SAPS. Were they from a specific region? Are all the provinces covered? Do you find perhaps there are different problems in different provinces, I think, is the area, and is this covered by this? You also talk about the checking of the registers and basic checks done during working hours on whether they have all their records up to date. Who is going to do that? Who's being taken from where to regulate this and make sure that everyone is kept up to speed? Because this is obviously an issue we've been calling for regulation for so long, in that the copper cabling is just one of the major problems in this country. So that I'd like to know where those people are going to be coming from. And finally, interesting that you're saying that the minister may decide appeals. Is this not a court matter, or it just seemed an interesting turn there. I wondered if someone appealing against the decision should not be going to a legal body as opposed to the minister, who may not well be qualified to deal with this in a legal sense. Thank you.
My question is on subtropic certificate and registration, bullet number 3. I don't understand. Maybe I need a clarity where by saying termination and cancellation of registration. I just want to check. Is this done when the dealer is not complying with the law? And also, how are you going to monitor that the dealer is in compliance with the law? And also, bullet 4 on registration on dealer and phone broker. I don't understand bullet number 4, except in confined arm and ammunition, if you can expatiate on that one. Thank you.
Ms. Chabu?
Thanks, sir. I would like to know when, if you are selling clothes second hand, because there are people who are selling in bulk, are those people supposed to apply? And if those people, once they have applied, maybe they've been approved to sell those goods, how are we going to monitor that all the goods that they are selling? Because sometimes you find that people, they stole goods somewhere. Then a person, because the rate is that, that person will take it for granted that they will just think, I, this thing is going on the website. How are we going to monitor? Especially at the store.
Maybe the first point I want to raise is that I don't see any way where a definition is given of second-hand goods. What are second-hand goods? I know that there's an example given about second-hand goods. Then we've got and that the bill does not apply to second-hand goods sold by way of public auction, authorized by warrant of execution or order of court of law. Obviously, those goods are authorized, and they are made authentic by the mere fact that there is an order of court of law. But we don't have a guarantee that in any auction, all those the goods sold there are actually because of the order of court. But may have 10% order of court and the rest of those goods may be stolen goods. Then there is also a restriction here to people who have been sentenced to court without an option of a crime. And I don't know how, even if you want to prevent crime, we go for sentencing correctional service. How do we warrant or ensure that rehabilitation takes place of these people who are supposed to be, you know, having a criminal record? If you have got a criminal record, it means you will not be permitted to sell this item. And the last point is that I see that this bill has been somewhere around from 2003, and it was supposed to be pushed 2007, and now 2008. So maybe there is a good explanation for its long delay. Thank you.
You said you had a follow-up. What is it? You said you had a follow-up about the person being responded to.
No, I just want to
check one question. Okay.
The bill here is also to address to stop the importation of second-hand goods. So Sister, we talked about second-hand clothes. There are clothes which are being imported into the country, which are being sold by hawkers in some shops. So on that front, not being addressed in the bill, what are you saying about those girls who are being imported from other countries to the country to be sold? Thank you.
Advocate Jacobs, I'll give over to yourself to respond, and then I'll take the other question of him.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first question from Ms. Kola Barnard was in respect of the police that has made inputs. We actually sent the bill out to all the legal officials in the different provinces to look at it. And it is so, Madam Chair, there are particular problems to certain provinces. I think if you look at the Western Cape, you will find, and it was very much in the newspapers, that I think in a 1 year's time, there was something like 19 million rands worth of copper exported from the Western Cape. Well, there's no very significant copper mining in the province. And we can only make the deduction that a very huge portion of that must have been copper wire that's been stolen somewhere. Madam Chair, and I think if you look at Gauteng, I think you will find that the chop shops, etc., is more endemic to that area, although it's not restricted to Gauteng alone. So I can really say I think every province has its own, and we, the legal officials, of course, link up with the functional officers who did the policing in the past. And so far, I think it links up with another question further on. The policing of this act had been with crime prevention, mostly. And as you know, the crime prevention structures are being strengthened along the way. But I believe, and our director from Vault can confirm it, I believe there's a specific component that will be set up that will nationally coordinate the application of this act. And not even just this act, it was already intended for the present act. And for the past few months, we've already started to apply the present act even more vigorously than in the past. It is so, Madam Chair, that I think you will need a very dedicated effort, especially with the implementation of the Act. But we see this as it must be part of the, I almost want to say, the precinct type of policing. That within every station, within every precinct, there should be an awareness of all of these type of businesses in the area. And there must be regular inspections, etc. Of course, the registers also serve another purpose, that once you are investigating a case, to go and look, search for certain items, especially jewelry and other items that have been stolen. The pawn shop around the corner is normally one of the places where detectives would first go and search whether those items are not given or handed in at the pawn shop. And I think that will link up with the obligation placed on the dealer itself to go into some trouble. I think the days will be past when the dealer can just say, oh, you know, this might have been stolen or whatever, but it's a good deal. You will really have to look if there are serial numbers that are scratched out, if there's changes to the thing, and even the type of know your client. I mean, he must know certain clients can't bring certain things Madam Chair, the registers, of course, the working hours relates to the registers, because we feel that with such a business, a policeman should be able at any time to walk in there without any announcement, with any warrant, to look at the registers, to look at the compliance of the Act. Of course, if you need to do actual search and seizure, etc., you would need a warrant. If you want to go after hours, you would need a warrant, and there the normal process will be applicable, where you have to apply to a magistrate for a search warrant. The question on the Minister for Appeals, Madam Chair, it is so that the process maybe differs in this regard from the Firearms Act, where there is an appeal board. In some previous legislation, we had the Minister as the appeals authority. We suggest the Minister, because I think the same committee has expressed itself in the past, even about some decisions that were made by an appeals authority. And of course, if the minister would handle an appeal and make a decision, it doesn't say that that decision of the minister is not justifiable. Of course, the minister can be taken to court. And the minister is being advised by his legal advisors, etc. So we don't think that which would really make such a huge difference. The certificate of registration, there was a question on how are we going to monitor compliance. I think I already said that we want to take the policing of this really down to precinct level, and that it must be part of the normal everyday policing to check up on this. Madam Chair, I don't think it needs some additional manpower. It's just a matter of how the manpower is being utilized. It must be part of your patrols, part of the normal policing every day. There was a question on firearms and ammunition. Madam Chair, if you look at the definition of goods in the bill, it says that goods may be any of the goods specified in the schedule, but does not include firearms or ammunition as defined in the Firearms Control Act. If we go into a pawn shop or a second-hand goods dealer and there is a firearm there and it's not licensed to that dealer, we will be committing an offence in terms of the Firearms Control Act. The selling of clothes, that was an issue that was really debated at length with NEDLAC, and I believe it is being regulated in terms of the act that I referred to that's being administered by the Department of Trade and Industry, but I will ask Director von der Walt to just expand on that part, please, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question with regards to the clothes, especially those that are bought in bulk, the bulk clothes used to be imported clothes. The import of second-hand clothes has been prohibited by the International Trade and Administration Commission of DTI. And the reason why second-hand clothes is specifically mentioned in this bill is to ensure that there is no loophole to make it possible for people to import second-hand clothes and to sell that under this bill. The question of second-hand clothes that are bought locally, I think, will be subject to the normal register requirements where a person who buys second-hand clothes will have to enter that in the register to explain where it comes from and when it's sold. It will, I think, then be possible to trace it to the legal owner.
Madam Chair, also about the public auction, the question was asked about the guarantee that there might not be a loophole. I'll ask Director von der Walt also to expand on that issue.
Madam Chair, normally the public auctions are held in pursuance of a judgment of court. There is always the possibility that there may be stolen goods that are being attached by the sheriff. But unfortunately, we cannot make provision for every single occurrence, and we will just have to ensure that the stolen goods that are attached and then sold by public auction are picked up before it is sold through that auction.
Madam Chair,
sorry,
Director.
Okay.
Madam Chair, regarding the sentence without an option of a fine, I agree with the member. I think we need to revisit the exclusions. I think they might be a bit too wide. I personally think that the like we've done in the Firearms Control Act, there must be a relationship between the type of offence that the person has committed, yeah, and not just any offence. So we are totally in agreement with that. We will revisit that and couch it. I mean, there must be some element of dishonesty or something along that line. But we will look after that. The member also asked, Madam Chair, the long time that it took for the bill. I've explained, Madam Chair, we went through two full processes of consultation. The bill was made my responsibility during March last year. It was taken or sent off to Cabinet around about June. It was approved by Cabinet in August. The problem we had, the state law advisors only certified the bill on the 30th of November, and then it was too late to come to Cabinet. We had at that stage the bill that was tabled, but there were quite a number of differences that the state law advisors brought about, and we thought if we need to work with two different copies of the bill before the committee, it will be counterproductive, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
I've learned that when you want to open this kind of a business, you apply at the nearest police station in order for that application to go to the National Commissioner. Am I right?
Madam Chair, yes, that would be the process, but I think that's an issue that we might look at as well. Because you will realize that if you look at the requirements in the Act, it requires other registrations in terms of business, etc., etc. That maybe we set out the process in the bill a bit more clear on the path that the person should follow before he comes to the police. There must be like a close cooperation or a company set up, etc., because we are referring to to how that company is made up, if there's a person in the company that has a criminal record, etc., etc. So I think the part would be that the person would go through the requirements of the local authority, of registering that business, etc., and that the police will actually be setting up that business will actually be the last point of entrance before the person can register as a second-hand goods dealer.
Fine, I just wanted to be sure, because experience has shown us this the very act that you are referring to, the firearms control side, where applications are being kept at the station level for years before it reaches the National Commissioner. So I'm just afraid that we might not get ourselves having the same challenge of police sitting with these applications, and at the end of the day we get people taking new guns to court. Because I've started everything, I've passed through everything, I must open my business, but when it comes to the police, then it gets stuck somewhere there. I just wanted to raise that so that we should be sure whether police will be able to implement this act. Because that's one challenge that we think we need to address, whether they'll be able to implement. All the station commissioners or whoever will be responsible that will be trained about this thing. So that when you have applied, I don't know the processes from the National Commissioner back to the applicant. Is it going through the same police station? Because they are the people now who are supposed to monitor that is the business person is in compliance with whatever is needed. But then you ask yourself, how are they going to do it as the police? We must avoid coming up with such beautiful legislation, but at the end of the day, we have a problem when it comes to implementation.
Maybe Commissioner can explain the role of the Metro Police and what bylaws get affected, and the Metro Police has to monitor whether it's legal or illegal to run a business around insurance, municipal to municipality, etc. So you can explain that issue, because I was foreseeing the danger of saying that the police station should be inundated with applications, because there are many applications going on. The other question is just around to see the processes, because if we get permission first, get registered first to the police, see, with a firearm license, the first criteria is to go to a gun shop and buy it, and then you apply. But this one is different because you apply and you have your own goods. You get my point. So maybe you can explain to me in terms of practicality. Because my worry now is that in as much as there is a lot of crime prevention around copper, and even issues of drugs, in actual fact, transportation of goods from one country to the other, and the smuggling of drugs and the take place in the second-hand goods. So we should be put a balance, because it becomes an offense, a criminal act. But when you talk about the second economy, you come up with these processes. So it means those people who are economically disadvantaged are going to suffer in terms of having their business open up, because they have to wait for 1 year or 2 years abandoning their urban business. So I just want you to explain that better than well understood.
Annelie?
Thank you for the question. Some of the things that I've going to say, obviously, I'm setting the study group discussion as well, but I think it's important that we say it for the record of this meeting. I did mention to you before that I think the order of the bill is a bit confusing, that we must maybe first deal with the actual bill itself and then with the accreditation, you know, what is this bill about, and then more specifically rather a table of fines than fines everywhere in the bill, but that we rather have a table of fines. And then I think we've got the opportunity where we can move away from descriptions of second-hand goods in registers, but rather have photographs taken of the goods and loaded onto computers, etc. So that is one of the things that we must maybe look at in the bill as well, to make provision for a digital photograph of an item rather than a description of the item. Then what worries me about the bill is the proactive policing. That there's no way, nowhere in the bill is there reference to such saying, for instance, in Acadia Park, there's been a house burglary, the following items have been stolen. And now the police in that area goes to distribute to the pawn shops and the second-hand dealers in that area a description of an item that was stolen from that house. So I think we need to make provision for that as well. For instance, we know that a lot of murders are connected, for instance, with cell phones that are stolen. And you know that we can get the message out quickly if somebody comes with this phone, this is the serial number, you contact us. Not waiting for that person to try and establish whether it's a stolen item, but the police actually alerting them. As the chairperson, I'm worried about implementation and the capacity of the police to implement this act. And I'm also worried about the fact that you say there are no costs. Surely if you're going to keep a register at a national level, it implicates some sort of cost, either to develop that register of, hopefully we're not talking about a paper register, but hopefully we're talking about a database. And surely there's costs involved in that. I'm a bit worried about the implementation. I'm also worried about leaving it to the precinct and to the station commissioner to do inspections without the bill clearly saying that at least once every 3 months inspection should be done, once every month, whatever the case may be. That is the other thing that worries me. Not in the bill is the powers and the obligations of the police officer. Now I find that this person is not fulfilling the letter of the act. And all it says in the bill is that it is fine, you can get a fine, you can get jail sentence, whatever the case may be. But it leaves no obligation on the police officer in the bill to actually open a case or to report it. And to, now, I don't think it's good enough for it just to be in the regulations. Again, if we refer to the firearms register, it's clearly stipulated what is the process that should happen if one finds that there is contravention of it. And then lastly, Jefferson, I'm worried about, you know, the statement that was made about the Western Cape, 90 million rand, I think you said copper, 19. Where was, and now I can't remember the English for it, Duana and Abstain. Where were they when these things were exported? Because they're the last people to be dealing with these issues. We were trade and industry at that point in time when they were exported. And shouldn't we look at some sort of obligation, even if it's in the regulations, of those departments when they get to the point where export certificates are issued? Because how does somebody succeed in getting export certificates for that copper that left the Western
Cape? Yes.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my question is if one or I have a bundle of second-hand goods, clothes in other ways, then intend to assist or help the community around who are so very poor, who don't have clothes, should one or should I first report or report that I'm helping other people? I'm asking this question, Chair. I was once pinned down, banned and restricted in house arrest for 10 years. Then people abroad and around the country used to send me some clothes. I had no clothes. Now, all along now, when I'm here working, I bundled those clothes and hand it over to my church to go and distribute to the poor people around the community in the rural areas. Now, My question there, as I've said already, that I should, if I do that, I should first report or register that I have this bundle of clothes that I want to do help our people who are around the community. And of course, it might also be a problem for those communities because I might help them with the clothes, but only to find that they don't have anything to eat. Then, and think of taking some and, you know, to sell around in order to obtain something for food. Is that a crime? Something like that. I just want to get clarity on that. Thank you very much.
Ms. Kalabana?
Thank you, Chair. I need to go back to the second-hand clothing issue. We've had instances where we've had floods, and an entity appeals overseas, and they send a container load of clothing for the victims who have lost everything. And those containers have been stopped on the border, saying it's forbidden to bring in contributions that have been sent from overseas. Now, it's to be distributed for nothing. There is no monetary gain here, and yet they're being stopped on the border. So there's got to be a way for us to ease the passage of donated goods to assist people in need. I'd like some to look at that. And I'm looking at your Schedule 1 goods, books. One sees endless secondhand books at church fairs. Are they now going to be in contravention of some laws? Certain of these items are readily available at little faiths, little celebratory events all over the country every weekend of every year. Now, are they all going to be in contravention? Obviously, we have to be very careful not to over-regulate, that we make actually just holding any function at all totally impossible. You can't expect some church to go to the minister and ask to be declared as something or other, acceptable organization under this. I've looked through and I've paged, I haven't found some exit line for entities like that. I'm hoping it exists somewhere. And also if one, an individual is now selling on an antique item, that's been in the family, as has been said by my colleague here, if you have an item and you're selling it on, are you now not in contravention of some regulation? I'm just very scared that we might be over-regulating and not having an escape clause for individuals who don't act, don't do these things on a regular basis.
Madame Wasse?
Thank you, I was thinking that the deal is specifically for buying and selling, and I'm looking at properties. My example would be people who have bought houses here, but they are not permanent residents of South Africa. But maybe they may be having had a working permit or so on, and they bought houses, say, by Maxash or so on. And then when he goes out, when he's going away, or he has finished his contract, he sells his house with all assets footstool. Now the person who's buying this thing, they might be stolen goods in the thing and they are second-hand properties. Is there any means of saying that the person before buying that type of goods, furniture, motor cars and so on, be covered by law because of how you have buying the house, my thinking is that. Sometimes could happen that they come and sell the house by accident, so they find that some of the goods were stolen and the person is already gone and then he cannot trace you as such. Now I was just trying to check if a person is buying a house with full furniture assets and everything, can that furniture or assets be checked first before the owner of the house leaves the house?
Thank you very much. Just before I give to Ms. Daniel, and what Ndate Mwase is saying, that the deal is also quite of, in that instance, where you discover that, or the police find out that the car has been stolen because you tampered with the engine and everything. It's not clear what happens to that property. Is it forfeited for the state, or do we leave it there, and then what happens?
the goods are there, we discover they are stolen. What happened after that? The bill is not clear. I don't have a, somebody must be arrested for convening the act. But it's not there.
Application of the Act Clause 2, Bullet 2 and 3. I need clarity. It's talking about exemption that has been accredited by the Minister. It's also talking of the only members of the association that has been accredited by the Commissioner, which is it. But all the same here, whoever accredits this, make this accreditation. Are we saying those who are accredited or the associations that are accredited can get away with anything? Where do we draw the line? Because you're saying the bill does not apply to this association. Where do we draw the line? And lastly, on the summer, we are talking about the dealers and the cyclists who must not keep any of the equipment in their premises. But dealers and the people who are recycling, this is business. Who do they sell to? You're not talking who should they sell to. Because I can buy it and put it in a private garage and do my thing. How are you going to be able to tell what I'm doing in a closed place? And I don't hear the bill talking to household goods that are leaving the country daily. Police are the ones who are administering affidavits, whereby people, when they are crossing the border, are saying, here's an affidavit, these are my goods, or this is my brother's goods, who is working here, but is not a resident or a citizen of this country, and they just shoot, they go, without any proper documentation of ownership of the goods, but a mere affidavit. What happens with that? Thank you.
Let us take the responses then.
Madam Chair, the first question on the comparison between how the Farms Act works and this Act, I don't think there's any difference. If you apply for a firearms license, you may not take possession of the firearm before the license has been issued. The same with this Act. You can apply for the license, but you may not deal in these goods before the license has been issued. So I don't think there's really a difference. On the application of the Act again, Madam Chair, I think in terms of the Police Service Act, the National Commissioner may delegate some of his powers, and I think it need not be that all applications go to the National Commissioner himself. It can, for example, be dealt with on provincial level to cut the line shorter for dealing with the applications and the issuing of the licenses. Madam Chair, the observation about the order of the bill, we ended up with the order of the bill very much on recommendation of the state law advisors, but we can look at that. As I said, maybe we need to put in some indication on the route that the person should follow as well. And when we do that, we might need to restructure the order of the bill. On the table of fines, it is really just a matter of drafting style. It is very easy to put all the fines in one table. Some people will say that if you read the contravention with the fine with it, it's more user-friendly. But there's really no problem to put all the fines in one table. The description of goods, the use of photographs, Director van der Walt has informed me that in some parts of the industry it is already in use. I think it's something that we can look at. Maybe as to keep a very short description in terms of the register to link the things up, but to the use of photographs I think can be very useful. And I think that's some issue that if there are people who will participate, the industry, part of the industry which will participate in the public hearings, it's maybe an issue that we can raise with them. The issue about the proactive policing, Madam Chair, you recall in the Explosives Act, we have made mention of a database of explosives that are being manufactured. I also know that in respect of stolen motor vehicles, there is a database that part of the or some businesses has access to, especially the insurance business, banks, etc., where they can actually see whether a car has been stolen or not. I believe there is stolen goods are placed on databases in SAPS already, but maybe we must just make that link and provide for some access by second-hand dealers to that database, that if an item is brought to them, that they can see, already see whether it has been stolen or not. And I think, you know, that just may be what is good about technology. If a person would visit your database and check up, and later on you find that item in the person's shop, that will clearly show the intent. And I'm sure the implementation, the issue of inspection, time periods, it's something that we must, I think, discuss. It might be good, but I think you will also agree that an inspection also relates very much to the quality of that inspection. And just to have a tick or somewhere that within a certain period an inspection has been made might not be that valuable. But it's really an issue that we must look at. Then there was mentioned that there's no obligation to open a case. Well, in general, there's an obligation on a police officer that whenever he comes across crime, that he should act upon it. I'm not sure how we can deal with that, but it is not reflected in the bill. But of course, if there is a crime committed, that is what must happen by a police officer, unless it's a very minor issue that you could tell the person, look, your register is not kept properly, improve it, and when I come here next time, I want to see it improved. I mean, there might be very slight deviations that would not require a criminal case to be opened. Madam Chair, on the export, the role of other departments, as I've said, the import of second-hand clothes and second-hand vehicles, that is being regulated by the Department of Trade and Industry. But I hear the concern. I think like the export of those huge amounts of copper, etc., there really should be an interface or question mark going up within other departments as well. And I think that's maybe on an intelligence level as well, where coordination might alert even other departments that be on the lookout for certain things. I don't know whether we must actually write it in the Act, or it's an issue of implementation. On the issue of a bundle of clothes, Madam Chair, I think the Act do give some indication, and there was a lot of other questions that related to the sort of once-off sale of second-hand goods. If we look at the definition of dealer, it says that it means a person who carries on a business of dealing in second-hand goods, and includes a scrap metal dealer and a pawnbroker. If I were to have a garage sale or whatever, which often happens as well, just cleaning up my garage, or just a few pieces of clothes that I would sell to someone, or the example of the books at the church auction, I don't think that is the intention, because if you look at the definition of dealer, that institution or that person is not carrying on a business as a second-hand goods dealer. And maybe it might create what one might refer to as a sort of a loophole, but I think we must be realistic. All the things that we buy in our house, sometimes at some time or other, we are going to get rid of it. And it's not necessarily that I, as a private person, I mean, when I sell that, that I become a second-hand goods dealer. It might be my neighbor who's interested to buy it. The same with cars. I mean, if you carry it on as a business, make a living out of it, of course you must be registered. But if I once off sell my car that I have, of course, you're not carrying on a business as a dealer. The donated goods, Madam Chair, I really think that is an issue that must be dealt with and taken up with the Department of Trade and Industry. I don't think that is the... This Act doesn't regulate the import and export, because that is actually the Department of Trade and Industry. This is about the trade in second-hand goods. Yeah. Madam Chair, about the houses sold with all the items in the house, I think that also is an occasional sale. It's not carrying on a business as such. I think it's not covered by the Act, and I don't think it's the intention to cover that. Then on the powers of the police, what happens if stolen goods are found? Madam Chair, I don't think it's necessary that we repeat in this Act all the provisions of the Criminal Procedure Act. Really, the Criminal Procedure Act sets out very clearly if you find items that are exhibits or that were involved in the commission of a crime, etc., how you must deal with them extensively in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. There was a question about the application of the Act, the exemption to only accredited members, and where the line must be drawn. Madam Chair, it is so. In terms of the present Act, exemptions could be made in respect of certain goods. We now change the focus from the goods to the dealer. In other words, if you get a group of dealers who would bring themselves together as part of an association, they form an association, and that association can really prove on the basis of the track record of those persons that they can be exempted from certain provisions. It could be in respect of databases, or I don't want to even make an example, but the idea is not to make it a totally unregulated area. We still need, and then we also retain the power that if they do not play ball, we can withdraw that accreditation, we can withdraw the license, and of course then the person would become subject to the full force of the law again. And as I've said, the idea is not to kick off with having a huge number of industries being accredited, and that must really be something that comes with time, where we are satisfied. And we can tell you with the consultations we had, and Director van der Walt can maybe point to some examples. There really are some of these dealers and some of the some part of the industry, even in recycling, where they are taking photographs, where they are really going the extra mile to make sure that they are on the right track. So we are looking at that type of situation. Madam Chair, where goods are taken across the border, of course the normal provisions relating to suspected stolen goods would apply. If there is any reason why a policeman would suspect that any goods has been stolen, whether it's been taken over the border, at the border post, or any place in the country, if you suspect that goods has been stolen and there must be some basis, some reasonable basis why you suspect it, then you can actually seize that item. And I'm sure maybe I've left out something. I'll just ask my colleague if there's anything that he wants to add as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regards to the photographs, I think the photographs is a good example of the type of exemption that could be made in certain instances. And this also links up with a question with regards to the industry exemption. If I may give an example, the non-ferrous metal or the scrap metal industry, in some portions of the industry, the dealers, or the recyclers rather, take photographs of the metals that are being sold to them. So that portion of the industry may then be exempted if it's done on an organized basis with standards that are set by the association. The members will be exempted from the register requirement, so they don't have to enter all the the particulars into the register, but they will be exempted from that, and the photograph that's stored in a database will suffice. With regards to the cost aspect that was also raised earlier, there is already a database nationally that was established with regards to all the dealers. So our progress steps in that regard. With regards to the import and export, the import and export permits are all dealt with by the International Trade Administration Commission that falls under DTI. One of the aspects in this bill is that the powers of the police may be extended to other bodies. The idea is also to extend the powers, the policing powers, to the inspectors at International Trade Administration Commission, and also in that way to increase the cooperation between the departments, so that these, when export permits, for instance, are issued for copper, then there will be cooperation between us to see if there is a link between stolen copper and the exportation thereof. And then lastly, with regards to the consultations, a lot of the industry sectors indicated that there are other regulations that require them to keep records. For instance, with a vehicle dealer, they have to keep records of vehicles that are being registered. They also have to register for VAT, and there are other requirements that they have to comply with. The idea is also with the regulations to exempt those industry sectors from keeping records of transactions that they already have to keep in terms of other legislation. So that the duplication of these records are also done away with, because I think it influences their business as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, there's just one I've forgotten about, the question about the Metro Police. And I think the powers in the Act is exactly that the Minister may give the powers of policing also to other institutions, and it is possible that the Minister may give these powers also to the Metro Police as part of their policing powers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jacobs. Are there any other questions that you... Okay, I think members of Parliament are satisfied with the response. I think also, Dr. Jacobs, when it comes to implementation, I'm not saying that it is supposed to be part of the bill, because I know all of us here, we are concerned about the implementation, because where we always experience some problems. Maybe we should also do a brief read with the implementation of the firearms, that we should have maybe dedicated police officers that gonna deal with this matter, or get additional give additional capacity to the people who are dealing with the firearms, the officers are dealing with firearms. We call them the designated firearms officers. They are dealing with liquor licenses and firearms. So if maybe we can, as you have said, that it will mainly be dealt with by the crime prevention component, but maybe we should also then within themselves have some few people or two police officers that will be assigned, because it's not every day that I'm doing this. Maybe after a while we get an application in order for us not to experience what we are experiencing presently with the firearms licenses. Maybe we should also think along those lines of having dedicated police officers that deals mainly with that when it comes to the implementation thereof. Are you sure that you don't have anything else? Put over?
No. When I go through the bill, I don't see your short title or your long title in terms of legal processes on legislation. So you should have a short title and a long title. So when I go through this, I can't see that.
Madam Chair, if I may, firstly about the implementation. We have spoken with the functional policing side on the implementation, and I know there are structures that are being put in place already in respect of policing the present act more vigorously. And maybe it will assist the committee if we, somewhere along the line with the public hearings, we just make some input from the functional side on the practical policing issues. On the long title, Madam Chair, on the second page of the document that was distributed, the long title is to regulate the business of dealers in second-hand goods and pawnbrokers in order to limit trade in stolen goods, to promote ethical standards in the second-hand goods trade, and to provide for matters connected therewith. And the very last clause, clause 45, that's a short title. This act is called the Second-Hand Goods Act and comes into operation on the date determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. Mm-hmm. Okay. Page 18 is the short title, sir. Clause 45. Thank you,
Rosemary. Thank you very much, Dr. Jacob. From next week, Tuesday, we'll then be dealing with the public hearings. There will be some organizations that will come and make some verbal submissions. Jeremy will contact all of us about the venue. I'm sure that in your program it reflects that it's start on Monday. But because of the limited number that we received, then we'll start on Tuesday. I'm sure we'll take only 3 days, that is in the public hearings, and then another 3 days for the deliberation, and then we debate it, and then we approve the bill. Because the deadline is the 21st of March. By the 21st of March, it must be within the MCOP. I think we've come to the end of the meeting. That is key for us, and I would like to ask members of the ANC to stay behind us for 10 minutes. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.